This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have double trouble. We have two people in the studio. We're going to talk about a new topic today. It's maybe a new topic, but it's also an old topic. We're going to talk about convergence, but not what you might think, but convergence in compute and storage systems for federal IT systems. And today in the studio, we have Dave Gwynn, and we also have Chris Howard. They're vice presidents at a company called Nutanix. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Some of my listeners know about Oracle and Microsoft and maybe Cisco, but Nutanix, Nutanix.com, kind of a new name, a new company. We're going to talk about the company, how it fits in with the federal world here. But before we begin, my listeners are always scratching their heads and going, well, geez, who are these guys and what's their background and why should I listen to them? So Chris, why don't you tell us about your background first and how you wound up working for Nutanix?
All right, thanks. I've been in the IT industry about 20 years, worked for numerous different large companies to include Dell, VMware, and about 17 months ago, I decided to join Nutanix to assist in managing the federal group. Heavy background on virtualization, IT infrastructure, pretty much anything and all things IT to the federal government for the past 20 years.
So you worked at VMware as well, is that right?
Correct, for about 6.5 years. Yeah.
6.5 years, well, saw it from worst to first, huh? Boy, that was a range.
It was a good run.
Yeah, it was a good run. That's great. And Dave, what's your background, please?
So I also have been in the IT industry about a little over 20 years, and most recently, prior to coming to Nutanix about a year and a half ago, I was at VMware also for 5 years. Chris and I worked together over there, mostly focused on Army when we were with VMware, but that's where we got our initial exposure to Nutanix was while we were still over in the VMware seat.
Hmm. Good, good, good. Well, both of you have been around for many years. I've been around a lot longer. I mean, me and Ben Franken went to high school together.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen this thing from many different angles, and I think what we want to do is, in order to define the problem here, we got to almost go back to Ben Franklin, talk about storage, and we're not talking about 4x6 cards, and we're not talking about magnetic cards, mag cards. Let's talk about storage, and maybe, Dave, you can give us maybe an overview, perspective of the origins of this company and what problem they're trying to solve.
Sure. So, let's take a look at storage, right? Storage traditionally in the rest of the world is a room in your basement where you maybe keep paint cans and carpet remnants and things like that. Storage 10 years ago in the IT world was a place where you archived emails, where you kept files that might need to be restored if somebody deleted a key file. Maybe you were hitting the storage array once every day or two to do something like that. But storage was redefined about 10 years ago when it became a critical part of virtualization. And so just as VMware's rocket was launching and x86 virtualization was sort of becoming something that was on the edge to actually something that was mainstream and done more commonly than not, all of a sudden storage was redefined as something that was going to be written to and read from constantly, high I/O. And that meant that the storage array became a critical component to every virtualized data center. For the last 10 years, that's been the way it was. And it was just sort of a fact of life for people. You have to, if you want to do a virtualized initiative, whether it's server virtualization or a cloud or desktop, you're going to need to have a SAN. And that SAN is not going to be something you hit once a day or so. You're going to hit it constantly. So that architecture has gone largely unchecked for the last 10 years. Three tiers, servers that access a SAN, and they're connected to those SAN via switches. And those three tiers tend to be kind of the complexity of the current data center today. We're looking at data center consolidation initiatives where we're saying we've got to reduce footprint, power, cooling, et cetera. The fact that you've got three tiers of infrastructure to accomplish virtualization is a big challenge. That's what Nutanix is all about. Nutanix, our pedigree, sort of stems from Google and Facebook and companies like that, where they looked at these modern data centers and said, there's an interesting common element between these huge data centers that are the largest IT presences in the world. That common element is that they don't use SANs. They don't use storage. And so that's what we're all about, is enabling commercial and federal data centers to do the same things that those data centers are doing.
I was listening to an interview with Kevin Kelly from Wired Magazine, and it's the 25th year of the World Wide Web. And I was around before the web, of course. And, you know, I look at these big trends and changes over the years, and I can remember firing up my first Netscape and seeing the movement, and I thought that was just amazing back 25 years ago. Well, Chris, put this in perspective and tell us about Nutanix, N-U-T-A-N-I-X, and it's been around since 2009. I guess people from larger companies came in and tried to – tell us about the company.
Yeah, so the company's been around since 2009. The first couple years were spent building out our distributed file system. In 2011, we came out of stealth mode around October, November timeframe, started delivering a product to the marketplace, and it's an extremely disruptive, and it's got a lot of innovation in it. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is reduce the complexity in the data center, give the customers, especially in our case, the federal government, something that's more scalable, higher performing, easier to implement, and easier to manage. The government's got to do more with less, and as their requirements aren't shrinking, but their dollars are, so we're trying to give them a way to continue to fulfill all the requirements, but at the end of the day, make it simpler to deploy, easier to manage, and just a better all overall fit for virtualization, whether it's cloud, big data, VDI, Splunk. It doesn't matter what the use case is from a virtualization standpoint.
You know, a lot of people have heard these terms in the past, and they're thinking, well, who do you folks compete with? Do you compete with Cisco? Or, I mean, because it looks like there were some executives that left Facebook, Yahoo, and Google and started this company, and they looked at manipulating large amounts of data, and they try to come up with a better solution. So who would be your competition in this area?
Yeah, the normal big cast of characters. On a day-to-day basis in the federal government, when we're in working requirements with our customers, it's always the EMCs, the NetApps, the IBMs, the HPs, the Dells. So pretty much anyone that's manufacturing a server storage infrastructure is our direct competition.
But, you know, Dave, this is a unique product because I'm trying to categorize this, and I like to put things in categories and neat and tidy. But it's an appliance, but it's really a dynamic appliance that handles data differently, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, appliance is a good word in one respect, in that it implies simplicity, and, you know, everything is contained in a single device, and ease of management, probably a reduced footprint, et cetera, which is true. The only part of the definition of appliance that I'm not a big fan of is that people tend to think of it as something that's, you know, for a small purpose that can just be applied in, you know, a unique situation. We are an appliance in those early definitions of the word, but we're also we refer to ourselves as a platform, in that appliance can be clustered with itself. And so Chris referenced modular scalability. This is huge for the federal government, and for 10 years it's been difficult. You know, when you have to architect these three-tier architectures, we've grown accustomed to the notion that you have to architect for where you're going to be in 2 years. You're going to get ROI sometime in fiscal 2017, and you're supposed to be comfortable with that because you looked at a spreadsheet that told you so. With modular scalability, you can start small and you can truly build your infrastructure out in a parallel fashion to how your rollout will go. And so the federal government loves to do spirals and loves to, you know, we're going to roll out 500 of this at a time and then go to 1,000 and then go to 2,000. Well, with modular scalability, you can put one appliance in to address that first spiral. And then only when you get to success with the first spiral do you go on to outfit more infrastructure to go to the next spiral. And so you're asking for funding when you have evidence of success, rather than floating it and hoping for the best 2 years later.
We're going to take a break in just a couple minutes here. I think many of our listeners understand the terms SAN and NAS very well. I think what we want to do is maybe define it for some of the people who are just, you know, opening up their browser and listening to this here when it's 90 degrees outside and wondering what Nutanix is all about. So what preceded SAN? Come first or NAS? Or what's the sequence of these two types of storage?
That's a good question. I think, I don't know, do you know the answer to that one? I don't know which came first.
I would have guessed SAN came first.
Yeah. The general concept, though, is similar, and that is to take an abundance of storage, and instead of having a whole bunch of different servers, each with their own disk to manage and so forth, to centralize that storage and put it in some location where a whole bunch of different things could share it. Fundamentally, it seemed like a good idea, but it is applicable when you have low access to that storage device, because obviously when you remove the storage directly from the server, you're putting it multiple hops away. You have to establish a switch fabric and connectivity to it, and that's a challenge.
Well, I think we define what the product is. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about application and how virtualization actually works in the federal government, some of the challenges there, and see how your product would adjust some of the challenges in virtualized servers and virtualizing different types of environments. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Dave Gwynn and Chris Coward, their vice presidents at Nutanix. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dave Gwynn and we have Chris Howard, their vice presidents at a company you may not have heard of. Is called Nutanix, N-U-T-A-N-I-X. Company started in 2009 out in Silicon Valley, and they have an interesting solution to some of the problems that my listeners have. And I think that's what the part in the show where you tried to find the problem here. You know, many of my listeners are getting pushed to the cloud. We know that. Many of my listeners are getting their budgets reduced, and they're trying to virtualize environments, and they're having a mixed rate of success in that. So you folks have both worked for companies and deployed virtual solutions. Give me a typical situation with an agency where they take and have to deploy a virtualized solution. And what's the step-by-step? How would they typically deploy it, and what problems do they encounter?
Well, so virtualization is gone to it's become very mainstream, and that's because it addresses major goals of many data centers, right? Getting maximum efficiency out of your hardware and providing certain functionality to users like self-service and agility of machines that virtualization can bring to the table. The companies that make virtualization, VMware, Microsoft, Citrix, Red Hat. These guys have products that are now very mature, and yet statistically you see a lot of challenges in virtualized environments. People go to a lot of people these days are virtualizing desktops to implement telecommuting or bring your own device type of things, or people are virtualizing servers to just bring greater efficiency to the data center and shrink the number of servers that they've got physically. But they have these big ideas, and typically they don't. They either fail entirely, or they don't come out quite as large as what was originally envisioned when the light bulb idea hit the CIO. So if you look at why mature software is having statistical problem in succeeding, you got to look elsewhere, because it's probably not the software. These are billion-dollar companies that are producing this stuff. So where do you look? You look at what it's running on, and that is where the problem lies. Infrastructure is the challenge. To run this virtualization software, you've got to run it on big iron, and that big iron that includes the servers and SANs that we've talked about, it's expensive, it takes a lot of space, it takes a lot of power draw, a lot of cooling, it takes a ton of expertise to manage it, training those individuals, paying for those individuals. So high level, the answer is the CapEx and the OpEx of the infrastructure is where the challenge lies.
Chris, there's an article on Federal Computer Week back in July, and it came up with some interesting numbers about successful installations of virtualized servers. And it talked about 9 out of 10 virtualized servers never reach production. Seems high to me. Does that seem like a good figure to you? What do you think about that number?
I think that it's pretty accurate. You know, both Dave and I spent a lot of time at VMware, so we can count in our head how many projects failed and how many succeeded. But at the end of the day, just to echo what Dave said, the reason that a lot of virtualization projects never get off the ground is simply the cost and the complexity of the infrastructure that it's housed on. Whether it's a proof of concept where the customer, you know, tries to see if there's success in their virtualization project and then they want to roll it out into production, the cost of that solution is enormous. So I think that a lot of times, not only the cost, but they don't have the expertise in-house to manage that infrastructure. They don't have the sustainment dollars to manage it year over year over year when you start looking at the not only the manpower costs, but just the costs of supporting the infrastructure, space, weight, power, cooling, those types of things. So yeah, I mean, there's an enormous amount of the federal government today that still has not virtualized anything, and the ones that are maybe 10, 15, 20% virtualized. The goal may be 80, but it's taken them years just to get to 10 or 15%.
You know, Dave, I had a guy here who managed all the servers for the House of Representatives, and He's sitting right there and turned to me and said, I spent 10 years of my life learning TCP/IP. Now I'm on a roof with a thermometer. What am I, a HVAC guy? But his new title is HVAC guy. I mean, he's talking to HVAC guys more than he's talking to security people or permissions based or new Red Hat software that's out there. Yep. So what about, you know, power and cooling? I always thought, I mean, if you read the magazines and you talk to people, that virtualization can reduce power consumption and decrease cooling requirements. Maybe that's not necessarily so. Hmm?
Well, it can, and the promise is true that if done effectively, it will reduce power in that you're eliminating what might be hundreds of servers and you're consolidating down to just a few.
That's textbook, but, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Textbook, you know, in the ideal world, that's how it's going to work. But the flip side of that is that, you know, you've got to have big iron, because what you are doing is you're consolidating all that I/O, all those reads and writes that used to be spread out over hundreds or dozens of servers are now consolidated into one. And if the architecture mandates that all of those virtual machines are going to be doing all of their read and writes on some distant other piece of equipment, namely a SAN, and you have to connect those ESX or Hyper-V hosts to that SAN via switch fabric, you're going to have multiple hops before you even get to the device where the read or write is happening. And then you got multiple hops to bring it back again. And nobody in the IT world really thinks of that as a great idea. Because if that was a great idea, we would also move memory over to a distant device, right? You want to have the virtual machine and its data, we call it data locality. They should be living as close as you can possibly have them to one another. And that way, I/O requests are handled very quickly and efficiently without the variables of multiple hops and the complexity of multiple hops. Now, back on the power and cooling thing, though, when you do put that big iron in and you've got multiple function-specific devices, each one of them do have to be powered and have to be cooled. And so you kind of, you know, you're out of the skillet and into the fire, or however that saying goes.
So, Chris, if you listen to that definition and you maybe get a piece of paper and draw it, you see a little square that says compute, another square that says storage, and according to Dave, sometimes they get split apart. And so I guess what your product is doing is converting, putting close together in order to achieve efficiency. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. So the Nutanix appliance basically has compute nodes in it with direct attached storage, and then the magic of our distributed file system is it presents all of that storage as a shared storage cluster. So from the virtualization layer, you still get all the benefits of the advanced features of all the great virtualization tools that exist from VMware and Hyper-V. Dave brought up a good point about data locality. We're able to do that within our technology because when a VM sits on one of the compute nodes, there's storage directly attached to it. The VM's data is also on that storage directly attached to that node. So when the VM needs access to its data, it never leaves the system board. Whereas in the traditional architecture, it has to go out of the server through the SAN fabric, physical controllers into the storage array, grab the data, do that trip backwards. So there's, as Dave said a couple times, there's numerous hops in grabbing that data, which we eliminate.
And I fully realize that this fabric is fantastic stuff, and it's very, very fast. And compared to 10 years ago, it's stunning and overwhelming. But to use the vernacular of the street, ain't good enough. I mean, it ain't fast, but it's great. I mean, mm-hmm. I love it. I've read the specs and go, wow, I couldn't even dream of this stuff. But wow. And so I think the idea of putting the compute closer to the storage, it just makes more sense just strategically, doesn't it?
It does. And so why aren't we already doing that? Why are we not? I mean, it doesn't seem like rocket science to say, hey, let's put really fast disk right next to the RAM where the virtual machines are running and have all the I/O go direct via the system board, right? It's patently obvious that would make sense instead of having it be multiple hops away. So why aren't we doing that? And the answer to that is that there's certain features in both VMware and in Hyper-V. One is a set of features enabled by something called vMotion in VMware, and a set of features in Hyper-V that are enabled by a function called live migration. And in both cases, for the last 10 years, the requirement to get to those features has been that all of the virtualization hosts must share connectivity to a single SAN. And when that was first announced in 2003 by VMware, when they introduced their vMotion feature, you can go back to the manual where that was first introduced, and they said, you must use a SAN. And that document came out in August of 2003. 2 months later, EMC bought VMware. Not coincidence, because that was the moment that storage was redefined in the IT industry. Storage for us at home still means a room that you rarely go to where you keep stuff you don't need frequently. Storage in a data center suddenly was redefined back then to say, hey, storage is no longer storage. It's now something you go to constantly. And in fact, not only will you go there, but hundreds of other VMs will go there constantly. That was a huge redefinition of storage. And so, not coincidentally, a massive storage company acquired VMware months later.
It's an interesting acquisition. I remember when that happened. Let's take a break. We come back. Maybe we'll take a look at a couple instances of success with the federal government. Maybe talk about an agency or two and talk about more of this technology involved and maybe try to define a DAS, direct attached storage, a little bit better for our listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dave Gwynn and Chris Howard, Vice Presidents at Nutanix. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have a couple gentlemen from Nutanix. We have Dave Gwynn and Chris Howard, Nutanix. A lot of my listeners get information from YouTube. They get it from listening to this show online, and they read blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog, and I'll be blogging about this interview. Do you gentlemen have blogs, or there's blogs you can recommend for my listeners to read to keep up on this technology?
Yeah, we have Nutanix.com/blogs, and in there we have access to quite a few additional blogs, which were either written on a daily basis by employees of Nutanix or just outsiders that we feel directly involve the community that we're supporting from a software-defined storage aspect.
And this isn't a small company. I mean, it's been around since, what is it, 600 employees? How many employees?
We're approaching 500. Actually, as we speak, we may cross 500 today. We've been growing very fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
International presence, I assume.
International presence. We've done business now in 37 different countries, and we've actually got sales forces on multiple continents, in multiple countries. And it's been an interesting run. You know, for what you see out of a typical startup is slow growth, commercially focused, usually continental U.S., especially if it's a Silicon Valley company. And Nutanix took a very different approach. We've been federally focused right from the get-go, and also we're focused on getting global as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So things like having the ability to support globally has been critical to us as well.
Last summer, my wife was in Europe. She was in a town that in Latin is called Londinium, which, of course, is London. Mm-hmm. There must be some technology folks over there as well. Believe it or not, I mean, they're so behind times with everything else. You know, these guys in London, what do they possibly know? What about the federal government? What do they possibly know? Let's talk about your technology and maybe pull back the curtains here and talk about, I mean, does this run on Red Hat? Does this run on proprietary? Is this .NET? Or tell us about the technology. I'm sure there's people want to know.
So we mentioned earlier, you know, you can think of this as an appliance or as a platform. It's a virtualization platform where, the base bare metal OS is going to be a hypervisor. We support multiple hypervisors, the most mainstream hypervisors out there. And once you take a Nutanix appliance and you put the hypervisor on top of it, what you have are some heavy-duty hosts that are, you've got this typical compute, RAM, and direct attached storage, where the disk is a combination of spinning disk and SSD that's directly attached to the system board for each host. That in and of itself is not all that complicated. None of our hardware is actually proprietary. It's not rocket science to look at it and to be able to reverse engineer exactly what you're looking at. It's all typical Intel stuff. But the trick is to take those independent hosts and, as Chris referenced earlier, have them surface their local storage, not just as what they have, but what all the other hosts have as well, right? So if you have four nodes and each node has 5 terabytes attached, from the hypervisor's perspective and from the guest virtual machines, we want them to think that they're looking at a 20 terabyte SAN, so that all the functionality of the vMotion capabilities or the live migration capabilities are all going to work. To do that, we run a distributed file system. And that's what is, we refer to it as the Nutanix Distributed File System or the Nutanix Operating System, the NOS. That runs as a virtual machine. So just like the customer's guest virtual machines, their servers and desktops are going to be running on top of the hypervisor, our distributed file system is also sitting there running on top of the hypervisor. And so those guest VMs, when they make a read or write request, rather than going over the storage fabric to get to the controller that's at the other side of the storage array, in some controller head on a SAN, the call for the read or write request is directly from RAM to RAM, and that's from the guest virtual machine to our distributed file system virtual machine, which handles the request, goes direct to local SSD. And so not only do you get great speed out of the fact that you've got SSD, but that SSD is located right next to the RAM. So you've got a RAM to RAM to SSD request, which makes for very high IOPS.
I was taking notes and I wrote down fast to fast.
Exactly.
That's pretty good.
Exactly.
You know, Chris, there's a company called BASF, and they used to have this advertising slogan called, we don't make XYZ, we make it better.
Correct.
And so I'm looking at Microsoft and VMware and going, well, geez, this is the BASF of virtualization, is that you don't make the but you make it better. I think that's a good way to talk about the program, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's been inherent difficulties in virtualization over the past couple of years. And as Dave alluded to earlier, it's not the software that usually causes those problems. It's the infrastructure. So how do we make VMware and Microsoft and KVM better is we give people an easier, simpler platform to deploy that's extremely high performing, extremely scalable, start as small as you want, grow as large as you want. So from a VMware or Microsoft or KVM perspective, I mean, we enable them to deploy quicker. So they're serving out VMs for whatever use case quicker and the environments grow quicker. So at the end of the day, obviously, from their standpoint, we make the infrastructure a lot easier to manage and just get the time to market for deploying services faster, which in their minds is good.
You know, Dave, next week I'll be interviewing a gentleman from Department of Labor, and we're going to talk about benefits.gov. And I'm sure if he were sitting next to you, he'd say, well, geez, give me a for instance. Give me an agency. Where have you done this, or where have you improved efficiency with an agency? Just because I want to see maybe someone else do it before I jump in.
Yeah, well, I mentioned we dove into federal in a big way right from the get-go, and so we actually right now our federal division is contributing 30% to 40% of the revenue for Nutanix. Nutanix takes federal very seriously, and federal seems to be taking Nutanix pretty seriously as well. We've got 57 different customers, different federal agencies and DoD entities that are already Nutanix customers, and we're in not obscure locations. We're in some of the most primary data centers that there are for federal. So, you know, we're at the Pentagon in their primary data centers, supporting some key VDI initiatives there. We're at NIST headquarters, FBI headquarters, FCC headquarters, Army NGB, and many of the guard states have adopted us. So, I mean, there are lots and lots of examples that we can talk to and places where we're currently deployed in supporting key initiatives for the federal government.
You know, Chris, when I read articles about virtualization, there's a word that pops up all the time, and I'm a big vocabulary guy, and the word is legacy, and legacy infrastructure, legacy this, and making a transition. And, you know, there must be some guidelines or steps or a checklist to make this transition. And I think in order to make this transition, you have to look at options and consider some of the complexity involved. I think this is where you can offer assistance as well.
Yeah, so from a legacy perspective, you know, we consider that the traditional three-tier architectures, and innovation happens every day. And, you know, people that run data centers are looking for more efficient and easier ways to build out their infrastructure and certainly save money. And legacy infrastructures traditionally cost more. They're more complex. They're harder to manage. They don't scale as well. So it's, you know, as these people come out of college and they go into the government or the commercial world and they start running data centers, you know, they're used to using their iPhones and tablets and tweeting and social media. So they're more open to the idea of looking at what's disruptive in the industry and what innovations have taken place and aren't necessarily just stuck in the old legacy ways and, you know, business as usual type of thing. So it's encouraging to see the federal government look at our product, implement our product, because it shows that they are open to an innovative approach to build out data centers.
You know, Dave, the Navy SEALs always talk about teams, Team 6, Team 2, Team 1, they operate as teams. And the data centers I've been in, you know, if you look at it from a perspective, you say, well, geez, there's the SAN team, then there's the network team, and then the server team. They may be in their different areas or different companies actually that do this or subcontractors. And this increasingly is not a technical leap. It's almost a interpersonal or a, dare I say the word, political problem we have here with these
politics.
Three different teams? I didn't want to say that word.
Yeah, you said it. Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the interesting dynamics of, you know, you're kicking off a virtualization initiative, and let's say you're a CIO or a program manager, and you've got some critical initiative that you're going to you're going to say, you know, something big time. Let's say you're going to get rid of PCs and you're going to roll out virtual desktops, which have, there's so many benefits to doing that. You know, there's telecommuting and greening IT and letting people bring their own device and all the goodness that comes of that. And so you're going to embark on something new and you're saying, okay, if we get the best and the brightest in here, this is going to succeed. And you start working on it, and little do you know that because you've got those different teams, and you got a desktop guy, a network guy, a security guy, a server guy, a storage guy, if those guys, you know, it's around the Super Bowl time and they're arguing over which football team is going to win, you could have an argument that breaks down your success, that literally some human dynamic is the reason that this thing fails, because somebody sets ground rules about their particular Rice Bowl that says, it's not going to be done that way on my environment. And next thing you know, that's what you're dealing with, is the human dynamic that's causing your hesitation.
And I think the dynamic with you, gentlemen, is fine, because you both work for VMware and you have a pretty good idea of that end of the spectrum. And you may be seeing bottlenecks and offering some solutions. And dealing with human beings in the past, I've found that many times it's best to find who the teams are first before you even mention technology, try to find what the relationships are, and try to move from there. Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about where this technology is heading, and talk a little bit about social media and maybe some of the technologies that our guests actually use every day. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dave Gwynn and Chris Howard. They work at a company called Nutanix. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dave Gwynn and Chris Howard. They're both Americans, and they work for a company called Nutanix, N-U-T-A-N-I-X. And today we're talking about virtualization and better ways to take that virtualization you have and apply it and get more bang for the buck when you do move to virtualization. You know, earlier in the show, we talked about people who blog and the people who follow Twitter all the time. Some people do, some people don't. My Twitter handle is @RayGilray. I imagine your company has a Twitter presence. Is that right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. We have quite a Twitter following. You know, our main company is @Nutanix, but Dave and I both also have @NutanixFederal. And there you can get a wealth of information about software-defined storage and software-defined networking. Pretty much anything and all things software-defined is what you'll find if you follow either one of those Twitter feeds.
So I'm just going to spell it for the compulsives out there. Ann is in Nancy, N-U-T-A-N-I-X, and then Nutanix Federal. That's great. We've talked about a lot of different topics, talked about, you know, change in the federal government and making a transition. Is this all boiled down to the desktop as a service push? Is this the big motivator here? What's the big motivator to take this technology virtualization and leverage it? What is the motivator?
I think desktop as a service is a very big one, as is, I think most of the federal audience is familiar with the FDCCI, the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative. That's another big motivator. So that's where we see the greatest adoption and the greatest interest in Nutanix tends to be in those two swim lanes, is folks who are going to be doing virtualizing of desktops, or folks who are going to be focusing on the compliance with that initiative, which has actually recently become law. And you know, now that it's a law, there's truly going to be great scrutiny as to compliance with shrinking data centers, closing data centers, and making those that remain more efficient. So virtualization is a home run in both of those categories. What we have found is that desktop as a service tends to really highlight or spotlight any shortcomings of these legacy architectures. And so there are plenty of people out there that have been doing this three-tier thing, and they've had stuff that's been sitting in their data center, you know, evolving over the last 10 years, but it's still this largely unchanged three-tier architecture. And it was cruising along okay when they were just doing server virtualization, which doesn't tend to have nearly as high of an I/O impact as does virtualized desktops. As soon as you put desktops onto a virtual platform, all of a sudden you're really exploiting that, and you're going to see gaps in that architecture that you didn't previously notice. That's where they get great interest in Nutanix and saying, hey, how can we do this more efficiently? And that's where data locality really starts to become important.
Yeah, I remember when I was in college, I had a car that you could, up about 40 miles an hour is fine, about 50, front started to wobble.
Yep. Exactly.
And the same thing with this. I'm sure that maybe with the smaller applications is fine. You put it on the desktop, all of a sudden your front end starts to wobble. Then you got to look at new solutions. And this is a solution that you consider because it will align your front end.
Take that exactly. Out of so to speak.
People are listening, scratching their heads, going, well, these guys know a lot about virtualization, but what kind of cell phones do they have? And what is their digital footprint? What do they look like? So I have a scientific test here. I'm going to ask each one of you 10 questions and find out if you are, in fact, a card-carrying nerd or not. And we're going to go with you, Chris, first. What's the year you bought your first computer?
1997.
That's pretty respectable. And as far as cell phones go, how many cell phones have you bought in the last year?
Oh, five.
Really, huh? Do you have your own Twitter feed?
I do. CHWVU.
Okay. Do you have your own blog?
I do not.
Okay. Do you use any personal online backup services?
I don't. I have one at home.
Okay. What kind of smartphone you have?
I have an iPhone 5S.
I wonder if you have a software-defined network at home. I'm not asked that. And the number of apps on that phone?
Hundreds.
How many use in a typical month, let's say?
I probably only use on a regular basis probably 20 or 30 of them.
We break into your house this afternoon. How many tablets do we find?
No less than five.
Five. Wow. I used to ask if. Now it's how many, you know? What social networking sites you participate in?
Twitter. Occasionally look at Facebook pictures of my kids. Those are the two big ones that I predominantly
The last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Paper.
Whoa, so close. He kind of faded off there. Dave, you're in to win. Are you going to win it here, buddy?
I think I got this.
Okay.
I'm feeling comfortable.
So do you have any desktop computers at home?
Oh, my goodness. I think I have five at home.
Five. I don't know if that's a good answer or a bad answer. Okay. Some people say desktop's old-fashioned. And how many cell phones have you bought in the last year?
For personal use or for my own consumption, I'd say three.
Three? What
I think Chris might have been counting family, though. If I'm going family,
well,
I'll
if he bought them, it counts.
Okay, let's go with nine then.
Whoa. Wow.
One more than Chris.
All right. Do you have your own Twitter feed?
Yeah. My Twitter is at DHGWYN. DHGWYN.
And do you have your own blog?
I don't have my own blog. I do write blogs on planes a lot, but I tend to never get them published. I just kind of write them and they
sounds
die
like
in the
venting
ether.
More than writing
yeah, exactly.
to me.
Exactly. That's what it is.
Dear John, you goofball, blah, blah, blah. You're
give me a cocktail and I want to write.
Yeah. What kind of personal backup services do you use?
I don't. I just got a big drive at home that I back up to.
What kind of smartphone you have?
iPhone 4 with an iPhone 5 sitting at home for the last 3 weeks that I have not taken the time to migrate to.
And how many apps do you have you typically use on a 30-day basis in a month?
I'd say dozens, mostly the travel apps.
Do you use Fitbit?
I do have a Fitbit. I'm not wearing it now.
Yeah, just a dumb question. Yeah. We break into your house. How many tablets do we find?
Four.
Four. That's incredible. What social networking sites do you participate in?
Facebook. What else? Twitter, obviously. I'd say those are the big two as far as participation.
It's not always obvious for Twitter. And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
It was paper, but John, this is key. You're skipping the question.
This is the balloon.
What about the PC question, though? I've got the early PC. I've got the first cell phone.
I switched the question on you. Come on now.
Come on.
I only look like a dummy. Well, I have a UNIVAC computer in my basement.
I've got an original PC in my basement.
Oh, you brag about it. I have original UNIVAC, okay?
I got
the first one.
Monitor.
You do have a monochrome monitor?
I do.
Well, a green screen.
Mint condition. Monochrome, dual 5.25 floppies.
Wow. I can remember, no one wants to hear about that old funny news with floppy drives and two floppies. It's pretty crazy. Instead of floppy drives, I want to talk about computer security. I think it's top of mind for many of my listeners. I spoke to a gentleman who is at the RSA conference a couple weeks back, and I was reading reports from a friend of mine who is in Austin, Keep Austin Crazy. Keep Austin Weird, I think, is the motto for the South by Southwest conference. And I'm sure many of my listeners are going, okay, this may be a good product, but how does this impact security? Does it help or hurt security, or do I have to just have a whole new checklist for security for this product? Where does security fit in?
So, Nutanix as a company takes security very seriously. As we've talked about a little bit, we're heavily ingrained in the federal marketplace. So our first customers were in the federal government. So it became very apparent at that point that the requirements were much different than just traditional commercial world. So, we've done everything we can to support our customer requirements through common criteria, working on the STIGs, things that are relevant to the federal government. And we keep improving our product on a daily basis. We have roundtables with our federal customers to understand better what their requirements are, what needs to be built in or changed in the product. And as soon as we find out that those are critical items that they want us to look at, we make the changes and we support them in any way we can. So, security is top of mind every day, especially for Dave and I in the federal marketplace.
Dave, a two-minute drill here. You got 2 minutes to tell me exactly what's going to happen in the federal government in the next 5 years. Well, take a guess. I mean, what do you think about virtualization and desktop as a service? Is it going to be standard, or where do you see it heading in the next couple of years?
I think it's going to be far closer to standard, just as the last few years has trended it to where we are today. I mean, virtualization is now all over the place, and it's adopted more and more every day. So I think absolutely it's going to enable these data center consolidation initiatives. Desktop virtualization, I mean, there will definitely come a time where having a PC sitting on your desktop is considered old school. That's already starting to happen. But your questions about tablets and smartphones, I mean, this is what this generation wants to use as his endpoint device. They don't want to use that on the weekends and then have to go to some clunky old PC to do their job. So I think absolutely we're going to be looking at people using the devices that they feel like using, and those devices will switch from hour to hour depending on where they're sitting and, you know, what they're up to, but they'll be able to do their jobs regardless of where they are and what device they're on.
I can't wait till I hear the phrase clunky old tablet.
That'll be coming soon, too.
Yeah, that'll be coming soon, too. Clunky old tablet, it's awful hard to figure out.
We'll reconvene in a few years and have that conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think if you are in the federal government and you're looking at making a transition to a virtualized environment, or you've had problems in the past, you can go to Nutanix and get a different perspective on exactly how to manage your virtual servers. Because, you know, I think they have an offering that's interesting. Anytime you can put RAM close to storage, I think you have good things that happen. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests, two vice presidents from Nutanix, Chris Howard and Dave Gwynn. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.